Welcome back to Hello Darling with Erin Darling. So today we are continuing our journey of my glow up series, how I changed my life in about a year. Now, if you haven't heard episode one, go back to that because it is very important. I'm talking about how I got engaged in 4 months. And this episode is actually going to be about the engagement and the wedding. This is about my non-traditional wedding, and we're going to talk about everything from the proposal to the ring to why I made a lot of the decisions that I made. And we're going to get into this. I'm going to be a little bit critical of the wedding industry. I think some people definitely need to hear this, especially if you are on the road to planning your wedding. There's a lot of stress that can be avoided. and I really, really wanted to do an episode to talk about that because I think it is so important to look at these industries with a very critical eye, because I think the most important thing is the union itself, having a fun time where you're not freaking out the whole time and doing it your way. So let's get into it. But before we do, let's chat about what is happening in today's pop take. I have been watching season 6 of Love is Blind, like many of you. Actually, I read an article that said that this is the most streamed show, I think, in Netflix history. I don't remember if it said that it was the most streamed season, or if Love is Blind is just the most streamed show. I mean, I'm not surprised. I was talking about this with a friend of mine earlier today, and I think that Love is Blind kind of hit this like perfect timing storm. It came out during the pandemic. I think the first or second week of the pandemic, we all had nothing to do. This was 4 years ago, which is hard to believe, right? But 4 years ago, we were all bored. We were all held captive in our own homes, trying to avoid the fears of the coronavirus. And we all started watching a lot of TV, including Love is Blind. Now, I think it just became comfort food. There's something about the show 6 seasons later where it is just a show that we know. It's a show that we know. We love it. We feel good about it. So Love is Blind has just become one of those things that I think people just keep going back to. And this season in particular just really did it right. I don't know if it was the casting. I don't know if it's just the pop culture moment that we're in right now, but people are talking about season 6. And the thing that we are talking about the most is Chelsea. Now, when did we all just decide that Chelsea was like the most hated woman? Like, was it because she made the comparison to Megan Fox, or was it afterwards when we all decided that she was clingy? But I'm here today to say that I think that needs to end. I am not a fan of the Chelsea hate, and here is why. We are watching this poor woman in real time realize her relationship is not going to work out. And mind you, it's not just a relationship. This is actually her engagement. This is the guy that she's going to marry because he proposed to her on the show. That's how the show works. So whether or not you're here, like fully invested in these people, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not invested in their own relationships. I believe that Chelsea is. Jimmy is telling her that he loves her. He's saying, I love you. But then his actions don't always correlate, and that can be very confusing, right? Who among us hasn't been in a situation like this? Like, I feel like every girl I know, I've certainly been in a relationship like this where you feel something is off kilter. Like, why are they saying that they love me, but then acting like this? It doesn't make sense. We are watching this whole relationship just like fall apart and crumble. And we're blaming her. We're saying she's clingy. We're saying that she is a problematic person. I saw an article come out on Screen Rant that called her problematic for being clingy. What? Okay. If you think that Chelsea is problematic, turn on the news. Like, there is other stuff going on in our world today. Like, touch grass. Take a second to like process that. She's not problematic. This is a girl that is probably insecure going into this experience, put herself in a crazy world, like the Love is Blind reality show world, which is super high pressure, high stress, meeting someone that isn't that into her. He's just not that into her. And watching it all fall apart, like in real time. So of course she's acting nuts. Of course she's like upset that he goes and hangs out with his friends, even if he stopped by a birthday party for an hour. It doesn't seem like it'd be that big of a deal. But if your relationship was healthy, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. Leave Chelsea alone, okay? We need to give this girl a little bit of grace and stop dragging her on TikTok and stop commenting on her videos like she is some evil person. Like, if you need a better example of evil in the world, like, turn on the news, okay? Not Love is Blind. That's not where you're going to find it. So that's where I'm starting my pop culture rant today, talking about Chelsea. I'm in your corner, girl. I hope you find love. I know it's not going to be with Jimmy, but I hope you find love. All right. Now let's get back to me and my love story. Which is still crazy, but not as crazy as Love is Blind, okay? So let's talk about what actually happened when I realized that this man I've been knowing for 3 months, like 3 months ago, I didn't know this person existed. I find out he's going to propose to me, okay? We discussed this thoroughly. I was not blindsided. This was not a surprise, but we book this vacation, right? And I know he's going to propose to me there. So that's about 4 months into our relationship. We book this trip to Tahiti. And I'm like, okay, I'm pretty sure this is where it's going to happen because we are already discussing, you know, future plans, marriage, kids. And as I reference in episode one of this series, because there wasn't a lot of game playing and stuff in our relationship, we were able to be really upfront about everything that we wanted. We're on the same page of like our big life goals and timelines and things like that. So, you know, even though I wasn't necessarily expecting this to be part of my timeline and I would have been fine like continuing to date, I did not put pressure on him to come to the table with a ring this quickly. But because we were there and I was like, wow, this guy's the one. And he knew that from our first hangout. I felt like, why wait? Why wait? Let's go ahead and do this. And because our communication was so open, we're so honest about everything. Of course, he wants to know what type of ring I want. Now, everyone probably has some sort of idea of like the type of engagement ring that they would like to receive. Like, even if you've never thought about it before, like, you know something, right? Like, you know, if you want something big, something muted, if you want like a, you know, a circular cut or a diamond that's a, why can't I think of any of the names of diamonds right now? I mean, mine's emerald cut. I knew that's the one that I wanted. So, but there are so many out there, right? And I feel like we all have like some sort of idea, right? Well, Rory did not just want the idea. He wanted like the specific ring. I was like, I trust you. I feel like you have good taste. Like, these are things I like. And he was like, no, I actually want you to be involved. I want you to pick the ring. I don't want to mess this up. And you know what? To be fair, I am a very, very specific person. And I can be very particular about many things. And he learned this about me very quickly. So I don't blame him for wanting to handle it this way, but did it take out some of the element of surprise? Yeah. I mean, when we're going around LA trying on jewelry, like, and I know it's not just because of like the size, it's like he wants to know specifically what I want. It did take out the element of surprise, but you know, he said that he would surprise me with the proposal. Like, I let him handle that. And I told him up front, this is what I wanted. I said, okay, Rory, I just want, like, however you want to propose, whatever, but I want a photographer Like, I want someone in the bushes and not your friend with an iPhone. Like, I don't want any like blurry iPhone pictures from like someone that you think is a good photographer. No, I want a professional. I want someone who does this for a living to document this. That would be amazing because I want to remember it. And I just had a feeling that I was probably going to like get really excited or black out or not remember it or something. And I was like, I at least want the pictures. I want the pictures to remember the moment. So that was my one request. And we'll get to this later, but he did fulfill that request. But back to the ring. We go on this journey, right? This journey of trying on rings, trying to figure out what I want. And even though I thought that I had an idea of what I wanted and I knew like the cut, I pretty much knew specifically what I wanted. Like I would say 99% accuracy what I wanted. But what I found going through this process is that I actually didn't know what I wanted. As I was trying on different things, I realized, oh, maybe I like this instead. Oh, I didn't even know that existed. Wait, what? And then I just felt like this discovery. It was like a self-discovery or a jewelry discovery because I'm not a jewelry girly. I don't love jewelry. I mean, I don't even wear it. I'm wearing earrings and I got my ring on, but like that's it. I'm not a jewelry aficionado. So it's kind of like, what is that MTV show that was like, you think you know, but you have no idea? That's how I felt entering the high-end jewelry industry as a consumer. I was like, what? Like, what? I'm like short-circuiting over here. I'm learning new things every day. And something that I learned very, very quickly about the high-end jewelry industry is that I don't want to support the high-end jewelry industry. Like, surprise, I didn't know that about myself until I learned more and did a lot of research. I did end up with a very, very nice ring, but the ring I ended up with is sustainable. It's a sustainable diamond, and I had no idea that that's what I wanted. But after I did so much research, I realized the cost of things, and I'm not even talking about financial. I'm talking like the human toll, the environmental impact of mining, of the mining industries and who owns what. And it's going to sound like a conspiracy, you guys. Like, I don't even want to go into it because I don't want to be conspiratorial. But like, let's say like De Beers is not just someone that sells you diamonds. They also own the mines and people get hurt in the mines. And if you really want to learn more about this, watch Blood Diamond. I think that's a really good place to start. I know that came out like a long time ago, but I did watch it while I was looking at engagement rings and I was like, yeah, I don't want to be a part of this. And my initial hesitation was more like sustainable. Like I care, you know, I care about the earth and I was more concerned about like the environmental impact. But when I also got to know the human toll, I was like, yeah, no thanks. This is really not for me. And the lack of transparency in the industry just really made me feel like, why would I spend this much money on a ring, like knowing this? It made zero sense to me, like none, like no sense at all. And of course, when I say like my money, I don't mean I was buying the ring, but you know, when you're going to marry someone, your finances collide, right? Two become one, like the Spice Girls say. So it's like, it kind of was, you know, like I was like, why would we spend this on this weird industry that is problematic? But that's the thing. It's like, we're brainwashed. We're basically told that this is what we should expect. You know, like if a man like comes to you, he has to have this like offering and it has to be this. And if it's less than that, no. And this size and like this amount of someone's salary. Who made up these rules? The industry that is selling you the diamonds, right? So you spend more money. Like someone thought of these rules to benefit them, not to benefit you. Is that really what you want? And these were the questions I had to ask myself. And of course, I have full respect for everyone's journey. Whatever you want to do, like get that ring that you want. But I realized this was not in alignment with anything I wanted to support or anything that I believed in. So I go on a new research journey, which is the sustainable jewelry industry, which was a complete 180 from where I started because, again, like not being a jewelry girl, I didn't know anything about the sustainable industry either. So I had to research, you know, who, where, how do I try them on, price points, like how to read like all of this documentation. Like I didn't know anything. And so I start re-educating myself in this whole new category and talking to Rory about it. And I remember when I told him, like, listen, I really want a sustainable ring. He was like, what? Like, are you sure? Like he was like fully prepared to like spend this like certain amount of money on it. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I've been thinking like long and hard and I just don't want to do it. Like, this is what I want. I feel like I'd be so much happier like supporting these businesses instead. So there are a couple of places in LA that are amazing that are completely sustainable jewelry places, right? Like Brilliant Earth is a chain. That's one of them. I did some research on them and didn't have the greatest experience when I actually went into the store. And I found, you know what, because this is like, I think a relatively new but yet booming industry, there's definitely a sustainability boom. And like, I really do feel like this is the future. I feel like they're having a problem with their sales associates because in multiple places that I went that are even like the bigger, more established companies that do sustainable jewelry, I found that it just seemed like their employees were like, maybe this was their first retail job and maybe they hadn't worked in high end, but it was just like, I felt like those experiences were just really lacking in terms of the traditional jewelers, right? Like they seem to know more, they're more knowledgeable, they could help you out. And I remember we even went to this place, we were shopping in multiple cities. We were in Washington, DC. We went to one of these chains of the nicer upscale sustainable places. And I just remember being so disappointed because we were like so excited to go to this company and like they don't have a storefront in LA. So we're in DC, we planned the day around this and I was just talking to a sales associate that had no idea what they were talking about. And that can be so frustrating because like a consumer like me, I'm not necessarily going in armed with like all of my facts and all of my research. Like I'm open to discovery and there's a lot that I also don't know. I would love it if I could work with a sales associate who comes to me with knowledge, expertise, suggestions, you know? And that just wasn't happening at any of these places that we went until we went to this incredible place in Beverly Hills. I think it's called Jean Doucette. I might be wrong, but I think it's like the great grandson of Cartier, of the Cartier family, who wanted to do sustainable gemstones. And the person that we work with there, we set up an appointment. This associate was so amazing, like so helpful. And it was honestly the first good experience that we had after going to many of these places. And I'm being honest with you guys here because I do want to be as transparent as possible. It's like these are the holes I felt in that industry. It's like just lack of knowledge from the people who work in it. Like, I feel like I could work in it now and I could do a good job, but I've also worked luxury retail in the past. So maybe I have a better handle of this. I've had every weird job, you guys. Maybe I'll do a whole episode on that at some point. But yeah, we had this one great experience and then I was still searching because I felt like I hadn't necessarily found that ring, you know, like the one where you're like, oh, that's it, you know? And I knew that Rory was like really depending on me to like figure out specifically what I wanted or like to get really close because it would help him like give me what I want, you know, like help me help you. He didn't want to mess this up. I knew the pressure was on. I had to make this decision for me. So we ended up finding this other place that I randomly found on Instagram. It was a jeweler that is downtown. I found their videos to be really compelling and beautiful. And of course, the algorithm was just showing me like diamonds and diamond rings and all this stuff because I'd been searching for it so much. So I find this place, I DM them. I'm like, hey, do you do sustainable? And they're like, yeah, we have options. And I loved their jewelry already and it was all custom. So I was like, this is great. Can we come in? We set up an appointment and this sales associate, oh my God, she was like the angel that I had been waiting for during all of my experiences, like trying to talk to jewelers that seemed like they cared and that they knew and that they could add value, other than the other person that I had mentioned before. Want to give that girl credit too. She was awesome. But, you know, this girl, this young woman, she made suggestions of things that I didn't even know that I wanted, like helped us try on the things that I thought that I knew that I liked, and then had other things on deck that were ready that were like, hey, try these out too. Check this out. Have you thought about trying to match your wedding band with the engagement ring? Like, but just brought up all these things that I hadn't even thought about at all because, you know, this is my first time going through this experience and Rory too. So we didn't know any of this stuff. But it was so nice. And, you know, in true Rory style, I found the ring that I wanted. I was like, yeah, I think this is it. This is like the exact stone. And it was available and no one had purchased this one yet. And it was the size, like the setting, it was just right. And Rory texts me and he's like, hey, I don't want to make this unromantic, but like, do you care if I just buy it? Do you care if I just buy it right now? And I was like, no, I don't care. Just do it, whatever. So he didn't want to lose the ring. And so he either bought it or put like a down payment, but it was so funny because the jewelers there were like, oh my God, like, is he like really with her right there? He's not even going to fake it and like come back or whatever. He didn't want to do that. That's just not his style. He was like, yeah, I'm just going to buy it. So we found the ring and it was everything that I wanted. It was just everything I wanted to support in this experience, I ended up supporting. We supported a family-owned business that has been in business for 30 years, a woman sales associate who really knew her stuff and like really, really spent the time with us and made us feel so good about that purchase. And a sustainable rock that I felt good about, that I felt, yeah, this is what I want to support. Like with this purchase money, like I feel positive about this. I don't feel hesitant. I don't feel weird. I feel great. And I'm happy that we were able to have that experience. I'm so happy that I was able to do it my way. And I'm happy that I learned that you can. There are options out there. In fact, there are many. DM me if you need them. I think I still follow all of these Instagram accounts. But I learned so much. And, you know, we are going into a sustainability surge. And I think that this is one of those industries that is going to be completely changed. And I think that, you know, anyone that looks down upon anyone that wants to do a sustainable ring, I think that that's so old school. And it's probably because you paid a car for your ring and you're bitter about it. Yeah, I'm glad that we didn't do that. But I found this statistic from McKinsey that said that one of the projections is that by 2025, so next year, sustainability influence purchases will account for 20-30% of all fine jewelry sales, equivalent to as much as $110 billion. So this is more common than I think people are talking about. And I've never talked about the ring, you know, when we announced the engagement, you know, I didn't even tell like certain family members because I was like, I feel like they're going to judge me or certain friends. I was like, it's nobody's business. This is our decision. But I wanted to come to the table and talk about this because I think that it's valuable. I think people should know. I think when you're researching, if you are helping someone buy you a ring or maybe it's not even a ring. Maybe you just want some, like, buy yourself some, like, diamond jewelry. There are so many good options out there right now. And I say support them. It's the future. Be ahead of the trend, baby. That's what I was. So yeah, that's what we did. And then it was time for our proposal, now that we have the ring. So we get the ring. She has to make some customizations to it. And they tell us it's going to be ready in about a month. Okay, that's great. And that will fit our timeline for this Tahiti trip that we had booked. So I was like, that sounds great. Okay, cool. Well, now we are in July and Rory decides to surprise me. He just decides, like, hey, we're in town. It's a long weekend. Why don't we go to my favorite resort ever? And I was like, okay, like, sure. Why? Where is it? And he's like, it's in Scottsdale, which, if you know anything about Arizona, what is, like, the one month that you don't want to go there? July. July, August, September, probably June too. You know what? I don't even want to go in May. Like, I want to go to Arizona at all when it's hot. Like, not only is it hot, it's, like, hot. Like, it's 110 degrees hot. And I thought this idea was psychotic. And I was like, what? What? We're going to drive last minute to your favorite resort? And he was like, you know what? Just trust me. You're going to love this place. It's so beautiful. I really want to make this month super special for you. And we're going to Tahiti later that month. So he was like, let's do this. You're going to love this place. And because it's so hot, we're going to get an amazing deal. And he was right. It was a very great deal. Like, the rooms were incredible there. We we were able to upgrade for, like, a night or two to, like, an incredible little villa with, like, an outdoor shower and, like, our own little private pool. Like, this place was awesome, and I understand why he loved it so much. Now, he loves to golf, so, like, it's because he liked the place to golf, but because it was too hot, there's no way we were golfing. Well, there's no way we were doing anything outside except being by a pool and being in the shade. But he plans this thing. He acts like it's a total last minute audible. We drive out to Arizona and all of a sudden we are going to do this one night. And he's like, hey, I have the best place to watch a sunset. And I love a sunset. I'm a sucker for a good sunset. So I was like, okay, sure. That sounds great. So he's like taking me to this other end of the resort that we hadn't spent time at before, because, like I said, for the most part, we were, like, just by the pool. So he takes me to this other end and I'm like, that's weird, because the other end of the resort is downhill. Like, I'm like, we're going to watch the sunset. What do you mean? Like, we're going the wrong way. We're going down. We need to go up to watch the sunset. It's blocking. There's a big mountain. There's all these trees. I was like, we are going in the wrong direction. I tried to stop him and alert him to this. And he's like, oh, no. It's a different place. And I'm like, okay. We go down. And we're in this little, like, shady, like, tree grove. And all of a sudden he starts talking about how much he loves me, and this is sweet, you know, like, I love that, but he's a very affectionate person. So it's like, I'm kind of used to this, you know, like, I'm not, no flags or, like, there's, like, no signals going off in my mind. Like, he's just like, I love you so much. You're an amazing person. I can't imagine my life without you. And I'm just like, yeah, I love you too. Like, let's go watch the sunset. I had no idea that he was proposing, like, until he told me. He was like, this is actually happening right now. I'm proposing. And I was like, what? And by the way, he's not down on one knee. He's standing up. So it's, like, not registering to me. So this man is telling me that he loves me. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? And then all of a sudden, he's like, I'm proposing, Aaron. This is actually happening. There's a photographer over there. And I, like, look. I'm like, what? What do you mean? I can't see anyone. They're very well hidden. He gets down on one knee, and then he proposes with the ring, which I was shocked because I was under the understanding that this was going to take a month to make and I didn't know it was ready yet. So I was like, wait, hold on. What? And then he proposes, there's the ring comes out. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then the photographer comes out who had been capturing this like in some area. And clearly then I started to understand, okay, this is why we're down here. We're down in this weird area, not watching the sunset. Because that's where the photographer could hide and still actually get good pictures. And she did. She got pictures and she got a really cool video, which is hilarious because you can see the confusion of me just being like, what? And then like looking for the photographer and then like, and then he gets down on one knee. It was pretty hilarious. But you know, a good proposal. He totally caught me off guard. And then, you know, the photographer comes out, we take some pictures, and we go to dinner that night. So a very fun evening, a very well-masked surprise. And that's how he pulled this off. Now, it was a good fake out. It actually, you know, it helps because we were able to go to Tahiti for this other fun little vacation in a way more relaxed type of vibe, you know, like, and I understand he told me later, he's like, the reason why I wanted to do a proposal there was A, to kind of throw you off, but B, because I knew that I could get photographer referrals like a little bit easier, like you had said that you wanted. And I'd actually been to this resort before. So like I knew the grounds, I knew where we could go. So I really like respect him for actually making that part a surprise because a lot of this other stuff was not a surprise, including the ring. But yeah, and I guess he talked to the jeweler and made this happen a little bit quicker, see if they could expedite this, and they did. So it was pretty magical. That's how our engagement came to be and how we got great photos out of it too. Now, okay. Now I feel like we need to get into what happened with this, with our wedding. So we are planning a wedding, okay? We are planning this wedding that we are going to do a traditional wedding. Like actually now we're going to do it in March of 2024. And we experienced so many things in that process too, because, you know, we were just learning. We were learning, we were researching, we were taking our friends out who had been married before, asking them for advice, getting information on their vendors, figuring out their venues. I was trying on wedding dresses with a friend of mine, Noelle, who was actually getting married as well, like around this time. Like we were setting up all these appointments, doing all of this stuff, all of this prep work, trying to figure out exactly what type of wedding that we wanted to have, right? But, you know, it didn't work out. And we'll get more into that into the following episode. But basically, our whole plans just changed. And the more I learned about the wedding industry, the more I realized, you know what? I would rather just do this completely our way than do it the way that is going to cost a ton of money. And why? Like, because of tradition, you know, like I knew I didn't want to get married in a church. I'm not very religious. I knew that, you know, there were certain traditions and aspects that like we just didn't care about. We just kind of didn't resonate with us. We knew that planning was going to be very, very tricky too, because we had family members on both coasts. Like he's from the East Coast, I'm from California. There were so many aspects of it that were getting so complicated. We wanted to do something simple. We felt the pressure to do something way bigger. We wanted to do something in a venue where kids weren't allowed because it's a bar. We were going to rent out a bar. And then there were some family members on his side that have kids that had an issue with that because they would have to be traveling out. And it just got so dramatic and bigger and bigger. And we were all we were just so uncomfortable, you know, so uncomfortable making all of these decisions, knowing that we weren't going to make anybody happy. And we are constantly, every time we would have these conversations or it would turn into an argument, we would have these conversations where I would just be like, who is this for? Who is this for? Who are we trying to make happy with this wedding? You know, I hope the answer is us. And then, you know, your friends and people will come in, they'll advise you, and they will say exactly what I'm saying. Like, they will basically tell you, do it for you. But it's a lot easier said than done because everyone has opinions. If people are giving you money, like certain people are giving you money for whatever, then they get to weigh in, and it's all so complicated. And there's so many people that you have to make happy, so many conversations that had to be had. And it just started to get so stressful and so overwhelming. So we had this idea of what we wanted to do, but we ended up changing it to a courthouse. Because guess what? That is the most low pressure thing that you could possibly do, is get married in a courthouse. And I have had a couple of friends that have done this, and they all were like, it was the best decision we made. We don't regret it at all. We're so happy that we did that. And I really started to come around to this other side of realizing that something like this is actually way more in alignment with what we were as a couple, what we wanted to do. Like, our guest list was just getting so long. And it was so frustrating because there were so many people on this guest list that I didn't even know, or that he hadn't met yet, because we're in a new relationship, right? Like, we'd still been together for like less than a year. So it was like, are we gonna meet all these people for the first time at the wedding? Like, if we don't even have a relationship with these people. And the best way to get around this, you guys, I'm telling you, is to have a really small family only intimate wedding. It's kind of the only way. And I'm so, so happy that we ended up doing it that way. So we ended up booking a very small courthouse in Ventura County. And let me tell you guys, it was not photogenic at all. It was kind of sad. Like, it was the kind of courthouse room where you walk in and it's like cubicles, like literal cubicles. And then next to the cubicle is a room which is like a white room. And it's like someone had made like some sort of like little arch with fake flowers on it. Like, it was sad. And I was like, you guys, please don't take pictures in here. Like, these are not going to be our pictures. Like, this is, I'm never going to want this on social media. Like, I'm glad that we're doing it this way, but like, no, thank you. And then we ended up renting a private room to this amazing restaurant in Calabasas and had a private dinner there afterwards, which really felt more like our wedding. It felt way more like our actual wedding than this little rinky-dink courthouse situation. But hey, we got it all out of the way, right? We got the legal marriage, and we had like kind of our small reception. And when I say small, I mean small. Like, I believe that there was probably like 10 people there, right? Like, parents, my siblings, and, you know, just a couple of family, like aunts and uncles that were local, where it was easy to include them. It was so, so simple, but so nice and so not chaotic. I remember everything. I didn't have that bridal experience where I was flipping out and stressing the day of and like wondering how this was all going to come together. And I'm really grateful for that. It was small, and it was just so, it was so nice. Like, this restaurant, it's called Saddle Peak Lodge. You can Google it. It's beautiful. It's, I think, a Michelin star like lodge. It was so nice. It was still upscale. It was still all of these aspects that we wanted to do for a bigger wedding, but just smaller. So I'm really, really, really happy that we did it that way. I don't at all regret it. I think elopement is kind of like the biggest flex that you can do. because it really says like, hey, we're just going to do this our way, like truly, and saves you a lot of money, saves you a lot of time. The planning was relatively easy, but here are a couple of takeaways I'm going to give to anyone that is planning a wedding like this or is thinking about elopement. And the first thing that I want to do is talk about before I get into these like specific takeaways is I need to tell you about my dress. Okay. Now, I'd mentioned earlier in this episode that I had been trying on a lot of different dresses with a friend of mine who was also getting married. But what I ended up doing, and I was like, okay, I was ready. I thought I knew what dress I wanted. It was probably like when all said and done, it's going to be about $4,000. Okay. Like a $4,000 wedding dress. And if you know the wedding dress industry, like that's pretty like, that's, I guess, average-ish, like in terms of the price ranges I was looking at. But it's also kind of like, I don't want to say low end because this is like a very well-known designer, but let's just say like there were also dresses I was looking at that were $10,000. So that's what I mean. It was kind of like on the low end of like that like upper tier scale. And of course you could go like lower than that if you want. There's definitely options, but the ones that I liked were kind of around like $3,000, $4,000, or they were just straight up $10,000. And I was like, okay. Like for a one-time dress, for a one-time purchase, like it was hard for me to wrap my head around that too. But this $4,000 dress, I thought it was beautiful. It was so chic. It was amazing. And I was just like going to pull the trigger on this. But once we decided to do the courthouse wedding and the small reception after, I felt it didn't make sense for me to wear a gown. It didn't make sense for me to wear an evening gown. It made sense for me to wear like a cocktail dress, something that's much shorter. And, you know, while trying on these dresses and looking at them, I wasn't looking at cocktail dresses. A lot of these like places, if you go anywhere in Los Angeles or there's a bunch of bridal stores in like Glendale or Beverly Hills, all these places, right? I wasn't like seeing like a simple cocktail dress that I liked. And so I realized I'm going to purchase a dress that's probably not supposed to be a wedding dress. Oh, I'm just going to purchase a white dress, which is pretty much exactly what I did. You guys, when I tell you, I purchased a $100 dress online. That's what I got married in. Yeah, like that's what I did. That's like literally what I did. I'm not exaggerating. I actually did spend more money than that because I bought multiple dresses. There were three that I bought because we ended up getting married in November and I didn't know if it was going to be super cold. I didn't know how I was going to be feeling that day. So I ordered one dress that was kind of like a cocktail dress that was more turtleneck style. It was like a high neck, long sleeves in case I was really cold. Then I ordered one that was a little more scandalous. It kind of reminded me of like Marilyn Monroe. It had like, it was kind of like a dress that could be worn as a corset or it could be worn with straps attached that had like a lacy bodice. It was very, very pretty, but kind of had like an illusion nude thing underneath it. And then I ordered a dress that I thought was kind of like my wild card. I didn't really know how this one was going to go, but I thought it looked really chic. It was like a one shoulder, like very, very simple white dress, super form-fitting, and I thought that dress is going to be incredible, but I just didn't know with my makeup and stuff that day how the one shoulder was going to feel, and I didn't want like makeup in my photos like all over my white dress. So that was my wild card iffy dress, right? But I kept them all, and they were all $100, okay? So I'd spent no more than $300 on my wedding dress. And what I ended up doing was for the courthouse, I wore the dress that was the wild card one with the one shoulder. And then for the dinner, I changed into the sexier one, right? So yeah, I spent $100 on my wedding dress, I guess 200 total if you want to separate the courthouse dress to the actual like reception dress. But that's what I did. That's what I did, you guys. And so now we're going to move into the takeaways. here's what I learned, you guys, okay? The first one is, you don't have to do what everybody says you have to do. You don't have to do what the wedding industry says you have to do. You don't have to do what your mother-in-law or what your mother says that you have to do. You don't have to incorporate anyone's opinions into the type of wedding that you have. I understand why people do. I understand why it's a tricky situation. I was in those tricky situations and had to navigate them. And I have a lot of sympathy and a lot of empathy for anyone that is having a tough time doing those things. But just remember, you could just self-finance whatever it is. Don't take money. Don't take people's expectations and do exactly what you want to do. No guilt. If you have the ability to do that. Every single person, including myself right now, talking to you right now, that has eloped will tell you it is the best idea. And I know that we all want to celebrate with our family and friends. That's great. Do a reception after. Like, do what we did and incorporate more people. But there's no reason why you have to do everything in the same way that everyone's been telling you for years and years and years. You can do it your own way. You can do an elopement. You can do a courthouse wedding and a much larger party. Like, you can mix and match. However, like, tell your own story. Tell your own story, you guys. The second takeaway I want to give you is the ring. Be as involved as you can. Do an enormous amount of research. If you have that type of good open communication with your partner, and this is not going to be a total surprise, like if they want to know what type of ring you want, if you go trying on jewelry, like get involved, get in the trenches, do the research, and really take the opportunity to advocate for what you want. Look at both sides. Look at the traditional jewelry industry. Look at the sustainable jewelry industry. Like, actually look at these things. And tell me what you learn. Like, please hit me up on Instagram. Find me at Darling. Tell me what you learn and tell me where you land. Like, no judgment at all. But for me, it was clear once I did a lot of research of what I wanted to end up doing. So if your partner that's going to propose keeps you in the loop of their plans of proposing and they let you know, like, hey, I want to know what you want, what type of ring, like, tell them. You know, advocate for what you want, and it can be whatever you want. Number three, the most important thing that I would recommend if you are getting married, whether it's like a huge wedding or a small thing or an elopement or the engagement, is to hire a good photographer. The good photographer elevates everything. It like ups the production value of your wedding. Now, our engagement, those photos were incredible. He, you know, Rory found this amazing photographer that he had met through someone else or that he knew that someone else had hired. I don't know the details, but she was so great. And she was only there for like 20 minutes and we had to reenact our proposal. She took all these pictures and they were gorgeous. They were beautiful. And now we have that moment forever on camera, which I'm so, so, so grateful. I'm so happy that we have that. But we did the same thing for the wedding. So we did not want those courthouse pictures because I knew this was not the most photogenic environment. We had gone there, we had sussed it out, I'd seen it. This, I did not want these pictures of like the actual wedding moment. So what we did was we hired a photographer to go out to Malibu with us. So we drove into the canyons and we rented a cool vintage car and we basically just took pictures of the bouquet and a veil in the back of a vintage car in the sunset. And it was so beautiful and so lovely. And we get compliments all the time on those photos. And then she came to the lodge where we had our reception and then photographed family and like photos like that for a little bit too. So we walked away with everything that we wanted documented. Just know, like, you don't have to document every single part of it. You don't have to have someone filming your vows if you don't want to, you know? Like, we knew that this was not the cutest situation. We're like, you know what? We're good on this. We just want the photographer for this new part that we've decided these are going to be our wedding pictures. I'm so glad that we did it that way. So no matter what you do, just remember that your day is worth documenting and it's worth finding a good photographer to document it for you in the way that you want it to be documented. And my fourth takeaway is, if you save money on your ring, go on two vacations instead. Because that's what we realized that we ended up doing. It wasn't necessarily intentional, but by purchasing a ring that was less expensive than what he was originally budgeting for, we realized we had this extra chunk of money that, hey, we could save, we could put towards something else or put toward the wedding. But we had decided that, you know, we were going to go basically use it on these two trips, which were incredible. But those are the choices that you're making. It's like, do you want this like $30,000 ring, or would you rather spend that money creating memories, like traveling, having a once in a lifetime experience? And I would choose the experience over the jewelry. Again, not a jewelry girly. So I'm a little bit different, but to each their own. All right, you guys, that's where we're going to end today on this story. And we will be circling back episode 3 with a big cliffhanger. No, not necessarily a cliffhanger. With a big change of events, okay? I'm Erin Darling. Thanks so much for listening to Hello, Darling.